Coming from us here at KBOO, we appreciate it. We want to hear from you.
And it keeps your head cozy and warm. And it keeps all that knowledge that you've gotten from listening to KBOO in your head.
It's still there. It's not melting.
It's not made of tinfoil. Don't worry. This is a nice knit cap. It's black, and it keeps the rain out in this Portland weather. So get that $5 a month contribution. That'll be your thank you gift. 877-500-5266. But we do need you to call right now. And the last minute of Flashpoints, 877-500-KBOO.
Does it for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Kevin Pina and Miguel Gavilan Molina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Onion Music Festival on Saturday, September 21st at the Pegasus Project in Portland. The Onion Music Festival is an annual gathering honoring community, personal expression, and creativity. This day-long event features 15 bands, workshops on sound healing, sustainability, herbalism, and vendors sharing their crafts. Again, that's the Onion Music Festival on Saturday, September 21st from 10 a.m. to midnight at the Pegasus Project located at 518 Southeast 76th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who have donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Cameo Cafe, located at 8111 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, serving burgers, breakfast, and brunch from 6:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. every day. Lunch was provided by Right Bayou Cajun Cuisine, a pop-up food cart located in the Portland area, providing a fusion of traditional New Orleans cuisine with fresh and local ingredients of the Northwest region. Find Right Bayou Cajun Cuisine at local Portland events. See their Facebook for more details. Dinner was provided by Le Bistro Montage, located in Portland's Industrial District at 301 Southeast Morrison Street. Le Bistro Montage serves Creole cuisine and is open daily until 2 a.m. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Thanks for tuning in. The time is 11:02. Up next is the food show, but first this from KBOO. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven, natural foods cooperative open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a weekly farmer's market every Wednesday year-round, located at Southeast Tibbetts Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years, online at peoples.coop.
Hi, and welcome to The Food Show. I'm Emily Becker. On today's show, we're talking about the plight of the Alder Street Food Cart Pod. The downtown pod was evicted this summer to make way for a new luxury hotel, taking a chunk of Portland culture with it. The carts are now in storage, and the owners are waiting for the day they can start operating again. We'll hear the story of the move and the pod's future from our guests. We've got Keith Jones, the director of Friends of the Green Loop, Ling Chen, a food cart owner. Her cart's called Shanghai's Best. And Marshall Runkle, who's the chief of staff for the office of Commissioner Chloe Udaly. After we talk about the food carts, at the end of the hour, we're going to talk about a class action lawsuit that's being brought against Tillamook Creamery with Amy Van Zon. She's the senior attorney at the Center for Food Safety. So we've got a very full studio today, and we're going to talk to everybody. But first, Keith, let's talk to you. Can you tell us the story of how you found out about the food carts closing?
Sure. So my organization is called Friends of Green Loop, and we are working on building a 6-mile linear park around the city. And that linear park goes right through where the Alder Street food cart pod was.
Can you just, for people who aren't in Portland, tell us what Alder Street is, like where that is in the city?
So Alder Street is right downtown. It is the largest and oldest, one of the oldest food cart pods in the city and where it all really started. So that being said, you know, as I was asked to testify at the Design Council Commission on behalf of this new project, the Ritz, because they're building a piece of the Green Loop there. And I went down to take a look at it before I testified, and to my horror, that was the Alder Street food cart pod.
You were asked to testify mm-hmm. at a design hearing for a big fancy hotel.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, sure. And you walk down from your office. I assume you're downtown too, right?
Sure, yeah.
And you just see that that's the site. Wow.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's not good at all.
Yeah.
So I called Travel Portland, first of all, to say, you know, are you aware of this and what do you think? And maybe some advice. And through, you know, moving around a little bit, because I was torn. I mean, I obviously wanted to see this, you know, built, but at the same time, I don't want to destroy Portland Institution in the process.
And what's Travel Portland's involvement in the?
Well, I mean, this is a travel and tourism destination too, right? So and Lynn can tell you that, you know, they had people from all over the world come there. So if you think about where Alder Street is, it's right by Powell's. It's right down in the downtown core. So people coming from, you know, everywhere to Portland essentially would go down there to experience the food cart culture. So anyways, I started sort of moving around and trying to figure out, like, you know, what kinds of things that we could do as an alternative. And I met Randy Gregg, who is now director of Portland Parks Foundation, but at the time he was not in that position. And he had created a concept called Culinary Quarter, which was, what if we move the food carts into the public right of way? So in parking spots along the city, and then that way they would be safe from development. And the real issue here is that, you know, those lots were essentially in set up their parking lots, surface street parking lots, and during the economic downturn, the lot owners, you know, looked to carts as a way of generating more income, essentially some more revenue. And so now that, you know, property value is going up, more and more of those lots are going to start disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not like atypical. This is going to be the new norm. We're going to start seeing more and more of these disappearing. So Randy's pitch was, what if we went from Director Park down to O'Brien Square and made that, you know, a strip essentially of food carts in the street? And so we started looking at that as an alternative. And then if we did that right, we could extend that all the way around the Green Loop and make the Green Loop a place for food carts. I'm not saying all the way around it, but like in different pockets throughout.
So can you kind of tell us a little bit more detail about the Alder Street food cart, what it was like, how many carts were there, how long it had been there, kind of some background information?
I think it was there about 20 years. And I would say, Lynn, would you say there's like 55?
It's more than 20 years.
Yeah, more than 20 years. But I think there are like 55 food carts at its peak.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got there, there were about 47. So, and that was another thing too, is that as I looked at, you know, this move, I realized that we had, you know, 47 food cart owners with varying degrees of English, and then multiple stakeholders, you know, like the development team, the city, and other people, and there wasn't like a lot of coordination. And so we need to put people in a room, otherwise it'd be a catastrophe. I mean, we were looking at a deadline to move those carts out on a certain date. Otherwise, they'd get towed away and they'd lose their business.
Right.
So my organization was able to raise $25,000 to pay for the towing. And we worked with Prosper Portland, who was very generous to give us some spots over at the post office site to store them in the meantime. So
cool. So we're going to come back to hear more about this story. Sure. But first, we're going to pass it back to our membership drive. We're in KBOO's fall membership drive. And it's very important time of year.
Yes, Emily, it is indeed. It's the time when all the foodies in Portland rise up and support the food show on KBOO Community Radio. So if you are appreciative of the fact that we have a food show that devotes itself to these issues, then do give a call right now, 877-500-5266, and join this community project about a more inclusive media. This is radio made by and for the people, and we want you to be a part of it. We have a very special thank you gift just this hour. KBOO has a pair of tickets to offer to the Slow Food Cascadia Luau and Pig Roast on October 5th from 6 to 10 p.m. at Old Apple Tree Park in Vancouver, Washington. This includes a tiki lounge, luau, Hawaiian pig roast, music and dancing, slow fish, and educational booths with a speaker from the Polynesian and Native food culture of the Lower Columbia Group. Now, that can be yours as a thank you gift if you can pledge $10 a month to KBOO. That's just $10 out of your bank account or your checking account every month for KBOO. It's really, really not too much to ask when you think about the value of KBOO, and that will be a thank you gift. Only the first person who calls at that level will be able to get that pair of tickets. We have other thank you gifts as well for people who donate, but you need to call and you can find out all about it. The volunteers can tell you the different tickets that we have available and the different thank you gifts. We have t-shirts, we have hoodies, we have hats, we have tote bags, all for your gift as you give to KBOO. 877-500-5266. I can't quite see you in that studio over there, Emily, but I know you're there. Are you there?
I am totally here. So the luau is going to be really awesome. It's one of those times where people will be able to connect with their food in all sorts of different ways. And that's what the food show is really about, is helping people connect to the food they eat, the places they eat their food. Like today we're talking about food carts, how to cook food, how to grow food, all sorts of things. And so we're trying to bring everybody together. We all eat, right? We all connect with and through our food in all sorts of different ways. And that might be talking about slow fish at the Slow Food Summit, or it might be eating a delicious pig, or it might be talking about how non-dairy cheeses are being attacked in around the country, which is something we've done on the food show. And so we really hope that you'll support the food show and KBOO in general, and to keep helping us bring thought leaders and change makers together to talk about food production and nutrition and the economy. We do so much. We talk about agriculture and labor, and I think it's really important to donate to the food show.
You know, every person involved in this show is a volunteer that puts in their time and effort to make this a reality. So connect with your food, connect with your community by calling right now and supporting KBOO Community Radio Station during this hour, and get that special thank you gift. I expect that this is going to go pretty fast, so do get your call in right now. If you need to pull over, and remember that number, it's 877-500-KBOO. Maybe you're in the middle of doing something and you just need to pause. Maybe you're doing your work, you're listening on your headphones, you're cleaning your kitchen, you're at home taking care of kids, listening to the food show and finding out what's going on in your local community with the food carts. Well, just take a pause from what you're doing. Call that number. Make sure you get in on this Slow Food Cascadia Luau. Bring the whole family, and that'll be a $10 a month contribution to KBOO. Set it up right now. It just takes a couple of minutes. 877-500-5266 is the number to call.
Awesome. Well, thanks. So we're going to continue talking about the Alder Street Food Cart Pod. We have two food cart owners here today that we're going to chat with next. First, I want to hear about Shanghai's Best. Lin Chen is here. I want to hear from you. Tell us about your food cart. What kinds of foods do you make?
I have the very traditional Chinese food, and it's a very, very fresh every day I make. And it's called a ban. We have a pork and a chicken and a vegetable and a wigot. And it is authentic Chinese food.
What made you want to start a food cart?
Honestly, and I make the food, and I have like a kids, my kids have party, and my friends, and all like my food. And one day the friend told me, I say, why you not open the restaurant? I said, oh, you are kidding. I don't have such money, you know. I want to open, but I don't have money. And the friend say, you can go to downtown and take a look at the food cart, and there is very, very good. And one day I come there and I try different food. Honestly, I say, my food is good. And, you know, and I say, oh, I need to open that. So that's why. And I talked to my husband. The first he denied. He said, no. I say, why? My kids already grew up. And I say, oh, I need to do something. That's why. And I opened the food car. When I opened it, the first day, I'm very excited. People like my food very much. And all sum up. Then I have a lot of customers from different states. You know, honestly, tours. And I have from China, even. The wow. Customer come here and they say, oh my gosh, I cannot eat Chinese, real Chinese food. There is real Chinese food. They are very happy. And I have different from DC, Texas, Washington, and I have Chicago, all the... also, I have Salt Lake City. All the customer come here and just talk about my food. They say, oh, your food is very, very delicious, very good. I have the customer last year, they have business come here. And then this year, they bring the two teenagers, one daughter, one son, come here. Say, you know, my two kids love your food. Last year, we come here. And this year, we especially come here to your food.
Wow, so you're really creating a place that's bringing people back.
It is.
You know, day after day, yes, when they're eating their lunch, but then also from across the country and across
it
the world.
It is. That's yeah, amazing. I'm very happy and I'm very proud of myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened when you found out that the Alder Street pod was going to close? How did you feel? What did you decide to do?
Yeah, the first I heard and I say probably just like a bum or something. And around May, I think, end of May, and the people say, you have to move. So we say, okay. So we very cooperate, you know, and the final day is June 3rd, 30th, and we all move out. Honestly, it's very sad for us, you know. And we heard and city take care of us. You know, we are only like group of the food produce, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't have power, we don't have anything. And the original, the landowner said they need to build the hotel. And we just say, okay, we move. And the city say we need to put us to another place. We just happy. So we know that the food cart is very important in Portland. It's mm-hmm. kind of the culture, you know. And after then, and we just heard, say the original owner going to be donate some money for us for the food cart. And we are happy, you know. And the city going to be put our food car first in the summer, the USPS, the parking lot. Then like 1 month, and then we can open a new place for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad, and also we are happy because the city know the food car is important. Mm-hmm. And after then, we just waiting for and... they have changed the place. Honestly, I have to appreciate the city, take care of us, and do something for us. But when we're waiting for, and right now, only almost 3 months already,
mm-hmm.
we don't know how long we have to wait.
And your cart's just sitting at the post office waiting?
Yes, still waiting there.
Yeah.
So for us, we want to open as soon as possible, of mm-hmm. course. But right now, we don't know what day we have reopened. So everybody just talk about this. And some the food car owners say, probably this year, we cannot open that.
Mm.
And I heard a lot saying that. And, you know, for us, we very, very, very angry, you know. for the big season, the summer already passed.
Right.
And then right now is the end of September almost. So we don't know how long we have to wait. And waiting for like even more. So that's why we just frustrated for this.
So are you able to work at all right now, or you're just waiting?
We just waiting to stay at home. Every day I have the customer text me, say what day you reopen that. I say honestly
they're texting you.
Yes, my customer texts me. I say honestly I really don't know. If I get the news, I definitely tell you.
Yeah.
It is truth. I have a lot of customer. For me, I really don't know how to say. You know, I have no idea.
Right.
Yeah, I have no idea. But I know some food car already got a space. But for us, more than like 20 cars still waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
Every day we waiting for. Every day I pray for.
Yeah.
So what day we have to open?
Oh. Such a hard story. So we're going to take another little break, but we'll come back and we're going to hear from another food cart owner. We're going to hear from the city and we're going to hear about plans for the future, which hopefully there is a space for Shanghai's Best to move to. Dan, are you over there?
Yes, I am. And I'm here with Jenka, and behind me are several smiling volunteers waiting for your call, people. 877-500-5266. I know this talk about the food carts. In some ways it's getting me hungry, in some ways it's getting me angry, showing how capitalism is treating an important part of our city, what Portland is known for. Another thing Portland is known for is KBOO Radio. We are unique among the radio stations. We're doing very well among a community radio station, and we still need your support. 877-500-5266. You hear certain things. I mean, we have our food program, which is nothing like you would hear on the Food Network if it was on radio. And speaking of the food show, let's hear a little more from Emily.
Yeah, so one of the things that we love to talk about on the food show is our local economy. We talk about labor, we talk to producers, we talk to restaurant owners, we talk to food cart owners, we talk to people who eat a lot. And a lot of what we talk to people about is how they take their passion and they turn it into a business. And then how they keep that passion, they sustain that passion, and they keep on creating their business through all kinds of difficulties. We've talked about the recession, we've talked about strikes, we've talked about, like today we're talking about food cart owners who lose their location. Here in the local economy of KBOO, we're asking for your help to sustain programming like the food show. And we're asking, what's your passion as a listener? What do you want to hear about on the food show? What do you want to hear about on the radio? And you know what? You can just tell us. Like, that's the amazing thing about KBOO is you can tell us what your passions are and you can support our community and become part of our community by becoming a member.
Yes, and here at KBOO, you can express your passion and you can also express your fashion. A pledge of $25 a month gets you our KBOO two-sided warm and snuggly hoodie with a little radio tower on it, and it's not broadcasting your donation. I mean, it's not broadcasting your destination to any satellite. It's telling all the people who see you that you support KBOO. You're a part of the community. You're putting your money where your heart is here at Community Radio. 877-500-5266 online at kboo.fm. And now, let's get back to talking about the situation of the food carts.
So we're going to talk next to Balin Sun from Boom Crepes. He's here in the studio with us. Balin, you have an amazing story about how you decided to start your cart. Can you tell it to us?
Oh, yes, indeed. Thank you for having me here first. So the reason why I started the food truck with my wife, the reason why, just because the first day I met my wife, is in Cano Beach, and actually our first date, we went to the crepe restaurant in Cano Beach. I think it's pretty famous over there because a lot of people went there just for their crepes. And then once we try and then say, "Ooh, we really love crepe," because crepe kind of like become our first impression for our journey. You know what I'm saying? So after when we back to Portland, we try different crepe restaurant in Portland, you know, and then we think about bringing something new to Portland, you know, bring something. But usually crepe they serve on the on a dish, on a, you know, with knife and fork.
Mm-hmm.
So we're thinking, you know, probably we can serve something different, you know. It's the same food, but with different form, you know, just transfer it to different form. And then we think about the probably because it's food court is all about street food, you know what I'm saying? People doesn't usually have chair and table to sit down to eat. And then why not we just, you know, fold it like a cone, and then people can hand it, hold it on their hand and then keep eating and keep walking all around.
So I've actually seen these crepes, and they are beautiful.
Yeah,
like a giant, like, waffle cone size.
Yes, something like that. Yes.
And then
yes.
It's like folded up with beautiful things, and then you make a creme brulee on top.
Yes, yeah, that's our special. Yeah, that's awesome. That's her idea. Yeah, it's pretty creative though. Yes, it's creme brulee crepes. So we combine a lot of things together. You know what I'm saying? We don't want to mix things. Boring.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make food fun and enjoyable and also Instagrammable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People always make take our food first, is, you know, take a pictures and post online and then eat it, you know. Yeah, so I mean, the cream pretty quick is pretty unique stuff in Portland. Yeah, I think even in the whole state.
I think so too.
Yeah.
So what happened when you found out that the food cart pod was going
to
close?
It's pretty, in the beginning, we don't believe that, because when we moved to the other part, every year we have some rumor going around, you know, saying, oh, this year they're going to take out the parking lot or something like that.
Every year you heard a rumor?
Yeah, every year, because we pay month to month. We don't have any contract, so it means we can lose our business next month.
Right.
For no reason, or for just give me a letter, say, okay, the park, somebody took over the park, and then you have to move out. So, but these years, in the first time we heard that, and we think about, oh, probably just, you know, rumor flying around, because it's such a big project for the hotel. I mean, it won't complete in the short time, you know. But I can't believe just the city approved that project so quick.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe half year, right? The rumor starting on January, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then on June, they sent us the letter, say you had to move
right.
out. Yeah.
So you didn't get very much notice at all.
Just 30-day notice.
30 days.
Everybody got the same notice. Yeah. 30 days, and then right before the summer.
Yeah.
And there's no way we can go. You know.
How did that feel?
It's helpless.
Helpless.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. It's kind of weird. Yeah. Kind of weird thing. I mean.
Yeah.
It just, I mean, that's how we started, and then that's not the way we want to end it.
Right.
Yeah, you know.
So what are you doing now? What did you decide to do?
So one thing, we keep waiting to the other the food truck part to build,
mm-hmm.
because the ultimate goal is we want to stay in downtown, because that's how we started,
right.
And we want to stay there. You know, keep our story going there. You know, but otherwise, I mean, in the same time, we try to we had other location inside of the Washington Square Mall. And because we try to expand our brand,
mm-hmm.
you know, we are not just one. Us is a food truck. We try to expand our brand as a. I mean, that's how we start. I mean, we start a food truck. We want to build our brand to bigger pictures.
Yeah, and so many restaurants that we all love started as food carts.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
you know, it's a very common trajectory to start as a food cart and then move into a brick and mortar, or different kind of situation.
Yeah, but the food truck is how we started, and then we want to keep that, because I want the people, our customers, see the starting point for our journey.
You
want to
keep that connection with
the
really
connection.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how, that's why I tell my wife, no matter how, what we do in the future for our brand, the food truck is the thing we want to keep it.
So that's really interesting. I guess I had never thought about food carts only having a 30-day, month-to-month kind of lease situation. It seems even more precarious than I thought food cart operations
because,
were.
Because the parking lot is owned by City Center Parking.
Mm-hmm.
And then they treat the food truck, the parking space, as the regular month-to-month parking space,
right.
Like the other vehicle. So if something happened, they just give you 30-day notice. you're gonna move out. Yeah, because we don't have any contract. We right. just pay month by month. Yeah, it's really unstable situation for any business.
It sounds really hard to like plan.
Yeah, there's no way you can plan. You just every day you just woke up and then hopefully today we don't get any notice. You know?
Yeah,
that's it. It's really hard for business perspective. It's hard for business to plan.
Yeah.
To what they're gonna do in the future. Yeah.
So we're gonna take another little break, but when we come back, we'll talk more with Marshall Runkle, who's the chief of staff in the office of Commissioner Udaly, and kind of get some of the city's perspective about how we can support these very important institutions, these food cart pods, these food carts that are so important to the culture of our city and so important as sites of business, especially for low-income business owners, new business owners, newcomers to Portland, to be able to start businesses. But this is a situation that's going to keep happening where we have these parking lots, these surface parking lots, and they're going to keep getting developed. So we'll talk more about what we kind of see for the future when we come back. But we're going to pass it back to Jenka to talk more about our membership drive.
Thanks, Emily. And we are urging people to support the food show right now. And I would say I would challenge you to give a contribution to KBU in honor of the Alder Street food carts. I love the Alder Street food carts. I love the food, the people, the atmosphere. And it's very, very, very disturbing that they're now scattered across the city. And I hope that people will stand up for community and stand up for local businesses and for local food carts and say, yes, I support them. And I want to give a contribution in honor of the Alder Street food carts that were there on 9th and Alder for more than 20 years. Again, 877-500-5266 is the number to call. Now, how much should you give? That's the question I'm sure you're asking yourself. Should it be a $5 a month contribution? Maybe you could do like $100 right now and just make that kind of contribution to KBU. Maybe a $500 contribution is what's right for you to really dig deep and support your community radio station at that level. And I would think if you could do a $10 a month contribution, we have a pair of tickets to a luau that's coming up at the Slow Food Cascadia Summit there in Vancouver, Washington on October 5th. This includes a commemorative glass entrance to an evening that includes a keynote speaker, Hawaiian entertainment, traditional and neo-traditional Hawaiian plates, and you can have roasted pig roasted by Vets Cafe, a veterans ecological farming program, and that is a $10 a month contribution to KBU. So you're supporting both Slow Food Cascadia and KBU Community Radio. Now is the perfect time to call if you've been waiting and thinking maybe we're talking to someone else. No, we're talking to you. Again, the number is 877-500-5266. I know you're over there, Emily. I can sort of see you across the studio there.
Yeah, so as we heard from Lynn and from Balin, there are people who are coming to Portland. They're visiting Portland. Travel Portland's involved in this situation, too. People are coming to the city because Portland's known as a food town. I don't know how many tourists you guys have talked to recently, but when I talk to them, they are always saying things like, I say, like, why are you here? What do you want to do? And they say, I have this list of restaurants and food carts that I want to visit. And they think about food first when they think about Portland, and that's what this show does. We think about food first, but we try to give you a little bit more depth than like what's the hottest food cart to visit or where you should be drinking right now. KBU is the kind of place where you can find coverage that's more about the people that are making Portland's food scene great and not just about what you should be eating today. And you know what? Listening to the food show, you hear about these things before the tourists do. So, you know, we want you to donate to KBU and become a member so that you can get the inside scoop on who is the making the food scene happen here in Portland.
So that number is 877-500-5266 or online at kbu.fm. And now Emily has another guest.
Yeah, so we're going to keep talking about the food carts. So the situation right now, as I understand it, is that all of the food carts got moved off the lot by this heroic effort between the food cart owners and PDX Green Loop, Friends of the Green Loop. They're sitting in a donated parking lot, right? The old post office downtown. So they're like hanging out and just waiting for this next thing to happen. So we'll get to like what the plan is in a minute. But first, I want to talk to Marshall Runkle. And I just want to hear, you know, why is the city involved in this? Like, how is the city involved? Why is your office involved in this situation?
Well, the city has numerous anti-displacement policies and strategies in place. And this is a classic case of displacement, development-driven displacement. And these are businesses that have become part of the DNA of downtown Portland, and retaining not only from an equity perspective of preventing small business owners from being displaced, but also from retaining part of our city's identity.
Yeah. So your office is helping with the move in some way. Can you just tell us a little bit about what you're doing?
Well, the big picture concept is that 40% of the land area in downtown Portland are city streets. It's one of the relics of the city's decision to have small blocks, which I learned actually is because corner real estate goes for a premium. So when downtown Portland was originally platted, it was platted for more corners, which means more streets. So the idea was, how do we make this culinary corridor that Keith talked about real? Of redeploying some of the land area that is city streets downtown for economic development purposes. And we looked at a short-term strategy to try to see if it was possible for cart owners to get up and running over the summer at a temporary site. And unfortunately, we ran into it was too difficult to get something up and running quickly. The infrastructure for the carts is just too... Mm-hmm.
Was that the North Park
Block site? Yeah, we looked at the North Park Block site, and we ran into insurmountable problems. So what all of the neighbors and in digging through the research, everything was pointing us to just south of the North Park Blocks around Ankeny Park, where there's a couple of little streets there that are prime candidates. There's already bathrooms on that site. Mm-hmm. There's street furniture there. There's a little stage.
Can you explain where that park is for people who might not have it quite in their heads?
If people know where the elephant is in the North Park Blocks, it's directly across Burnside from where the elephant is. So it's if you take the North Park Blocks and just go just slightly south from there.
Cool. And so, just to clarify, your office is in charge of
correct.
Bureau
we have
of Transportation.
The, we have
parks?
The assignment for. We do not have the Parks Bureau assignment, but we do have the assignment to the responsibility for the Portland Bureau of Transportation. So, it's the Transportation Bureau that would issue a permit to the cart owners and Friends of the Green Loop to use the city streets for their new location. And just to be clear, like, it's taking longer than I had hoped and I had wanted, and we were working at feverish pace for city, but slow to everybody else, to not just have a temporary location for the food carts, but this would be a permanent arrangement where, like, it's not... and no longer having to worry about being displaced in the future. I mean, there's no as much guarantee as there is in this world. And I would point out that all commercial businesses, unless you have a longer lease, the 30-day notice is for all commercial businesses, not just food carts throughout the city.
Wow. So we're all in a very precarious situation, unless you own your building, which what restaurant does.
Yeah.
So I feel like Portland's an unusual city. We all know that. And but it feels extra unusual to have the city actually making these kinds of like pretty big efforts to like make this happen, to save a handful, what would we say, 36 food carts at the end?
26
food carts. So like why is it so important? I can, you know, we all have our own reasons why we think food carts are important, but why is it important to you and to your office?
Well, the food cart owners are entrepreneurs, and I think it's important to recognize that this isn't about like some not only a charity project, or you know, like mm-hmm. This is about enabling businesses to exist downtown, and businesses that have become part of our city, reasons why people come to visit our city, that are important components and amenities for downtown, you know, real estate, you know, people who work in offices, like I've had dozens and dozens of people contact me about like how, you know, they're struggling to find where they're going to go to lunch now. I mean, like, it's just, you know.
Which technically is not your job to figure out where people are going to eat lunch.
It's true. It's not my job. But I think that, like, it's, you know, I'm not sure if I'm, you know, 100% in on the keep Portland weird, you know, kind of ethic. But I think it does demonstrate that we still have our mojo as a city, like that we can still do interesting and cool things and think outside the box a little and do things that are not important and meaningful and, you know, not just the, you know, kind of color inside the lines mm-hmm. work that we do every day.
And I think that to do it in a way that's not just another temporary situation that's going to put, you know, these businesses in a precarious situation again, but to do it in a way that's going to be a little bit more long-term, permanent, something, like you said, not a guarantee, but like the intention is to have this Ankeny Square or Ankeny Park location be a more long-term project, and also the idea for the culinary corridor, really exciting and very long term. So let's talk a little bit about what that kind of future idea looks like. What does it look like when these food carts move to the square? Actually, you know what I want to ask first is, how far away are we from making this reality?
I mean, I think that we could be signing a contract to install the electrical infrastructure to make it possible by the end of this week. And then we're a couple of weeks away from construction. It's at this point, I think we want to, when we open there, have something that is really beautiful and that works. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they say you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. So I think our first impression around for the cart owners and for the city is we want to make something that is going to be function well, at not only for the cart owners but for customers, and has the right, you know, set of amenities that's going to make it a place that people want to come back to.
Right. And Keith, I know that it was a pretty huge effort to get those carts moved off the original lot in the first place. Like, what kind of timeline do you think it's going to be to get them moved into a new location?
So while they're over at the ones that are in storage right now, the owners are down there doing deep clean on it. And so, you know, what will be different now is that you'll be able to walk all the way around the cart. It won't just be, you know, like they were packed in there pretty mm-hmm. tightly at the others. And some, like, you had never seen the sides of your carts, I don't think, and you know, paid $40,000 for that. And then when we pulled his out, you know, the carts out from either side of the Boom Crepes one, we were shocked. I mean, like, the tires were not just like flat, they were melted into the pavement. Because that cart had been there for over 15 years.
And I'm sorry, you said that it was sold to you for $40,000?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Wow. Uh-huh. Okay.
That's how most people start their food cart business. They need to buy mm-hmm. other person business just to get the spot.
Right.
Yeah.
But for not like a mobile business at all. Like it was definitely like there.
It was there,
cemented in the ground.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and that's the thing is a lot of people think that the carts are very mobile. Mm-hmm. I mean, technically they should be able to move within 24 hours, but like every single one we pulled out had an issue.
Yeah.
Whether it be flat tires or something leaking or the water tank. Yours was so tall we had to get through the wire. And I don't know how that happened, but like, you know, we are making sure that in the future that we look at all the things that were going on down there to try to make sure they don't happen again and do it a little bit better.
Right. So the hope is that these food carts are going to be able to move in to this location in the next month?
And that's the thing, too.
4 weeks? I'm seeing 5, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks.
I would say 4 to 6 is the number that I would put out there.
And from what I understand, it's more about the construction, mm-hmm. you know, and when they can get people scheduled to get in there. But, you know, it's not just customers calling the food cart owners. I get texts and emails every single day asking when. And, you know, part of my reason, I mean, like, I have not been billable myself for 4 or 5 months
mm-hmm.
because this is such a big project. And once we get it done, I mean, it'll all work out in the end, right?
Yeah.
It's fine. But I get text messages from them every day. And I, you know, when we were talking too, you know, I know now the story of all of these card owners. They're like friends and family almost. And so it's painful to see them not working.
Yeah, it is painful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to leave it on a sad note, but we need to move on. But it does sound like there's some hope that, you know, even though it's hard right now, everybody's kind of like not working as much as they want to be.
Well, I can say this. That if the other thing, too, is that we can only get 26. We're pushing for 28 right now. Like, we're pushing for everything we can. But if we do this and we do it right, like Marshall said, then we can make the case for more of this. And if we can do that, we continue to move down south from that location, down 9th maybe, and create a space that was bigger than Alder Street ever was. So we can actually make this a bigger thing. But first, I think not only do we have to prove to ourselves that we can do this, but to the people of Portland that this is something that we should all be fighting for.
Absolutely. Well, and I would say, like, the question on my mind isn't if this is going to happen, it's when and how it's going to happen. And like, and I promise you, when this works, then it's not just going to pave the way for the existing cart owners that we're working with. It'll continue to pave a way for other cart owners as other parking lots get redeveloped.
Absolutely.
We'll continue to have a space in downtown Portland.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for being here today. We're going to take another little quick break to hear about the membership drive.
All right, and after hearing all about the food carts, I'm sure a lot of you are hungry out there, but before you head to lunch, there's one more thing you need to do. Call 877-500-5266 or get online to kboo.fm. You can become a member, increase your membership, decide just to give us a wad of money just for the heck of it. It's your choice. It's your money. Spend it wisely. Spend it with us. Two people who are spending their money wisely are Terrence from Southeast Portland, who came into the station. We even gave him his personal cowbell. And Mark from Southeast Portland, also called. Hey, that's Southeast Portland representing. How about Northeast Portland? How about Southwest? How about Beavertron? Come on, folks.
Beavertron.
Speak for your neighborhood. Speak for KBOO.
All Beavertrons and Beavertron.
Because KBOO goes all through the metro area. We're not just broadcasting to Southeast Portland. You're hearing us even in Washington State. Yes, in the Couve. Couve, call us. We are representing for you. 1-877-500-5266. And boy, one more bit of food cart news coming your way. And remember, an important thing about food carts, they're entrepreneurs, they're first businesses. A lot of food carts then graduate to brick and mortar, to restaurants all throughout the city. Support the food carts, support KBOO. And here's Emily.
So we do have another gift that I don't think we've talked about yet. We've got tickets to the Slow Food Summit, which is part of the Slow Food Cascadia event on October 5th. So that event is a cider festival. It's a food festival. It's a maker fair. It's a food summit, which is where you can sit down with hear from speakers like Jacqueline Freeman, who's a writer and a biodynamic farmer, and Josh Volk, who used to be my farmer from my CSA, and Tao Orion, who wrote Beyond the War on Invasive Species. So lots of talk about permaculture, about slow fish, about Northwest agriculture and Northwest aquaculture. I think that's what we call it. And so that summit, we have two tickets to that summit as well. And then after the summit, there is a luau, which sounds really fun. We've heard a little bit about that. I think the food show is pretty awesome. I have a lot of fun making it. My co-host Tal and I are kind of constantly asking people, like, what's important to you? What do you want to hear about? And we don't have any shortage of answers to the what do you want to learn about the food system? What do you want to hear about food in Portland? And I think bringing you stories like the story of the Alder Street food carts is important. And we're going to keep continuing to bring you important stories if we're able to, but that takes you as a listener to donate to us. So next we have a phone call interview. We're gonna talk about a story. We're following up on a story that we had on the show back in June. As always, if you wanna listen to any past episodes, you can go to kvu.fm/foodshow, or you can look it up on Google Play or wherever you listen, iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts, we're all in there. So we're going to be talking to Amy Vanson, who's the senior attorney at the Center for Food Safety. And we're going to talk about some new developments in the mega dairy story that we heard about before. Hi, Amy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's start with a little bit of background. So what are what's the big issue with these big dairy operations?
Well, the big problem with these mega dairies, as they've come to be known, is that they can find so many animals in one place that it just generates this massive amount of waste. And how that waste is handled and disposed of can cause groundwater, surface water pollution, and that groundwater is often drinking water that people rely on, especially where these two of the biggest mega dairies are in the country, are in eastern Oregon in the desert, where, of course, groundwater is also scarce. They use a ton of groundwater to operate these big dairies. They can find these, you know, tens of thousands of animals in, you know, concrete barns indoors. They don't get to see, you know, pasture or sunlight in their you know, whole lives. And then they cause a lot of air pollution, and that includes, you know, major sources of greenhouse gases like methane, which is a, you know, very powerful greenhouse gas, as well as other, you know, noxious air pollutants that are dangerous to inhale, but also cause things like haze and acid rain in the scenic Columbia Gorge. So it's a really big host of problems with when you confine that many animals in one place. Not only that, but, you know, consolidating the industry in this way and overproducing, you know, flooding the market with cheap milk really drives the prices down and makes it harder and possible for smaller family dairies to compete in Oregon. So it's a problem of environmental pollution, public health and safety, family farmers being able to compete, and then animal welfare as well. It touches all of these things.
So, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show today is because there's a very timely issue, which is there's a class action lawsuit against Tillamook Creamery. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So the Animal Legal Defense Fund sued Tillamook on behalf of several Oregon consumers, but actually on behalf of a whole class of Oregon consumers. Many of the listeners might actually be part of this class of people who bought Tillamook products basically from the year between August of 2018 and August of 2019. And they sued based on Oregon law that makes it unlawful to misrepresent or mislead, deceive consumers about the source of your product. And so here, Tillamook has been banking for years on this idea that its cows are raised by family dairies in Tillamook, Oregon, on the coast, that they live out on pasture and get to munch grass in the sunshine. But in reality, 80% of its milk comes from the largest dairy feedlot in the United States, possibly the world, that confines tens of thousands of cows on concrete in the desert. This is the dairy I was mentioning earlier. Three Mile Canyon is this facility, and it's permitted for 70,000 cows. Just to put that in perspective, the federal definition of a large dairy is 700 cows. So it's 100 times bigger. And, you know, they're kept in these industrialized conditions. So this is the deceptive part that Tillamook has used on their website and their social media and their other advertising to say, you know, that we come from small family farms on the coast that use, you know, better animal welfare practices and don't, that are sustainable. But in reality, it's very different.
And just that you're supporting those small family farmers and those small businesses in not some giant, is it even owned by an Oregonian? You know, like where are the owners of these giant feedlots?
The Tillamook County Creamery Association is still, a co-op company. And so there are, you know, some of their farmers are in Tillamook County. But in order to expand and be able to sell their products nationwide under the Tillamook brand name, they had to go and source, you know, more milk. And so instead of sourcing from many more family farmers throughout Oregon, they chose to partner with this huge facility, Three Mile Canyon, that actually was established in 2001 out in near Boardman on the Columbia. And not only do they source from them, but actually Tillamook started sourcing from the disastrous Lost Valley mega dairy, which is what we were talking about when I was last on the show, that was permitted just down the road for 30,000 cows. So another huge source of groundwater, nitrate pollution, air pollution, you know, in this area. Which is already, I should mention, a groundwater contaminated area. It's called the groundwater management area in the lower Umatilla Basin out there. So we, you know, the public told the state, please don't permit Lost Valley. It's a really bad idea. They did it anyway. Lost Valley racked up over 200 environmental violations over its year and a half of being in business. And finally, public pressure shut it down. The state finally shuttered it. Unfortunately, a new farm operation has bought that facility called Easterday, and they've already submitted an application to reopen for another nearly 30,000 cow mega dairy in the same spot. So that kind of leads me to my, you know, point of hoping to come on and make my pitch today, which is we are going to start a campaign that consumers can sign a petition telling Tillamook, you know, please do not source from this new mega dairy that's replacing Lost Valley, and really stop sourcing from any of these mega dairies. We want to call on Tillamook to actually be the truth of its advertising. And so that will be coming very soon, launching that petition that folks can sign up and make their voice heard to Tillamook.
Where can people find out about the petition and more about this issue?
They can follow us, Center for Food Safety, on Instagram, we're at Center for Food Safety, all one word. On Twitter, we're at CFS True Food. And we're on Facebook under Center for Food Safety. And you could also sign up and become a member, just signing up with your email at centerforfoodsafety.org. And so we will be shooting out lots of information to our members and throwing it out over social media, as well as many of our partner organizations. We have been partnering with a coalition of groups that are both local and statewide and national that are fighting mega dairies in Oregon generally and calling for a moratorium on any new mega dairies until the state can actually protect our air and our water and our family farmers. So
great,
many
Amy.
Of those partners are folks that people might know as well.
We're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much for telling us. So everybody, check out Center for Food Safety. And that's it for this episode of The Food Show. Thanks so much to all my guests from the Alder Street Food Cart Pod, Green Loop, and the City of Portland, as well as Amy from Center for Food Safety. If you missed the show or you want to find out more links or resources, check us out at kbu.fm.
Emily. And we do have 2 minutes left to raise a little bit more money for this show. And we do have one pair of tickets for the Slow Food Summit in Vancouver, Washington, for the next person who gives $180 with your contribution to KBOO. That could be a $15 a month contribution. And the Slow Food Summit is on Saturday, October 5th, the historic hangar in the Fort Vancouver National Historic Site. Slow Food Summit, bringing food experts, activists, producers, chefs, and community leaders together to learn about regional food connections. And they'll probably talk about Tillamook and all of their shenanigans at that as well, as we've been hearing about. So do give a call right now in the next 2 minutes, 877-500-5266. If you think that we have been talking to someone else, no, we are talking to you. The money you invest now comes back to you as a service that's essential, especially as corporate media outlets continue to mass-produce feeble attempts at news and culture. We are outside of that norm because of your support. And we need you right now, 877-500-KBOO. $15 a month, Slow Food Summit. Get in on that now. This is your chance. This is your opportunity to support KBOO and to support the KBOO Food Show.
Yes, and as you can tell from the show you just heard, things keep changing. What? Where did this food cart go? What? Tillamook cheese doesn't come from happy cows on the coast? I mean, things keep changing, and you're not going to hear the news about this anywhere else but here. Not just the local news, statewide news, national news. People's opinions, what's going on behind the scenes. KBOO does what no one else is doing, and it's definitely worth your time to listen, and it's worth your money to keep us on air. 877-500-5266. You can become a member, make a monthly contribution. If you're already a member, you can increase your contribution by $1 a month, $2 a month. Everything helps. Bulk sums, you know, a jar of quarters, whatever. You can mail it, you can bring it in here to 20 Southeast 8th between Burnside and Ankeny. And all right, folks, it's high noon, and I believe...
on to the jazz music.
Jazz lives.
But keep those calls coming in. We want to give away these tickets at $15 a month, the Slow Food Summit. And if you could do $10 a month, you can go to the luau. 877-500-5266.
You're listening to Jazz Lives on KBOO Portland. Rick Mitchell in this afternoon for Nick Geffro. We're going to be inviting those of you who support jazz on KBOO to call in during this time. Of course, the most important thing is supporting the station, but if you have a particular program or interest, obviously it's a show of support for that program and that interest, in this case jazz, to call in during the time. Let's get things started with something called Mambo for Roy. This is from Roy Hargrove's Crisol, a group that consisted of both Cuban and American musicians. Put together in the late 1990s. They had problems touring because of the cultural boycott,